Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts and starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Get Ruined Dits for Breakfast, weekdays from 6, or subscribe to Ruined Dits for Breakfast catch-up at triplem.com.au.
Oh, it's a big, big day, being a Thursday. How are you, Roo?
I'm good, Dits. I'm very, very good. Getting a bit excited. A bit of rain around again today. I think it might get a bit nasty today. They're talking. We got away with it yesterday. Wasn't much rain around.
Also, selection day, because just about the game of the year tomorrow night at the Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, exactly right. Adelaide and Sydney, very, very big clash. Sydney have come out and said they're treating it like a final already, Dits. And we'll find out later today if Rory Sloane and Tex Walker will get up for the big game.
Now, unfortunately, Roo, this morning, the story that's dominating is this awful tragedy. So when you talk about these other things, they're almost trivial, really, when you see that a fella has taken his own life, two young kids are now orphaned, and the mother is missing. This is just horrific. It's awful.
And it's happening here in South Australia, Dits, isn't it?
Here in South Australia. Just amazing. It really is. I go back to the Falconio murder. Things like this just shouldn't happen. And there's more at stake than just our reputation. But, you know, I worry that people around the world think that Australia's just a nasty, horrible place, and we all know that it isn't. This is just terrible.
It is terrible, Dits, and we'll find out more about it throughout the show. We're going to cross to Channel 7's Mark Mooney as well and get a bit of an indication of what has happened. We'll wait and see there before we start trying to guess too much. But they've also said Adelaide's one of the most livable cities in the world, Dits. Well, look, we all know it's a great place to live. I want to find out what they take into consideration for all this. Melbourne's number one and has been for a long time.
Well, therefore, whoever's done this study doesn't know what they're talking about. How can Melbourne beat us?
Well, Sydney's not even in the top 10.
Yeah, well.
Got Sydney covered.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, it's good. We're in the top 10 in the world, which is a feather in our cap.
Fantastic.
I've read up a little bit about this. I'll tell you what they're called, the Economist Intelligent Unit's Global Livability.
You can't even say it, let alone get in it.
Say that five times after a couple of pints.
No, we won't.
So they sound like an exciting mob anyway.
But we've got a big show. Mick Molloy's going to join us later on as well, so plenty happening, and the Angels will be in today as well, Dits.
All right, Ruin Dits here on Triple M.
Ruin Dits for Breakfast, 104.7 Triple M.
What's making news around the world, Roo?
Well, Leighton Hewitt won't have to borrow any money for a while. Won't have to ask for a loan off anyone, Dits.
What's he done?
You know, he bought a pad in Melbourne. I remember him many years ago buying an apartment or a penthouse, I should say, over in Melbourne. Yeah. And has sold it for $9.5 to $10 million.
So, you've been shopping again, Roo?
No, Dits, no.
$10 million for an apartment.
Yes, so double story apartment on top of St Kilda Road.
Do you know what he did? And this is quite true. Back in the day, when he would go to the Australian Open each year, he'd have mum and dad and wife and kids and whoever and entourage, and he thought, I'm playing a tournament at Melbourne Park. I could stay at the Flag Motor Inn like all the others, or I can actually buy an apartment, and that's what he did. He just didn't want to stay in the hotels, and have that exposure. So he thought, I'll buy a joint and base myself there.
And if you've bought anything in Melbourne in the last 10, 20 years, 5 years, 2 years, it's gone up quite a bit, because that market is super, super strong over there. So Lele's got a few extra dollars rolling around in his ashtray at the moment. So good luck to...
good investment, Lele.
Yeah, well done, mate. The house that had a few of the Snowtown murderers, Dits, has been up for sale as well. We go from Leighton Hewitt's $10 million house to a house at Murray Bridge that the Snowtown ringleader, John Bunting, was using to do a fair bit of bad stuff. That's been sold recently as well. So how could you move into a house knowing that there'd been serial killers, that it had been torturing people and murdering people and dismembering
people? Well, some people
have a
morbid fascination with it, Roo. Some people, this could be, as I said, there could be people all over the world interested in this. There are wackos out there that think this is, you know, fascinating.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, though. You said there'd be wackos out there interested. A normal person, I don't think, could buy that house and move in with a family knowing that body parts had been, you know, chopped up and, you know, all that sort of stuff. You just couldn't, could you?
No.
If you knew something that happened in the bathroom, or if you knew there'd been, you know, heroin addicts in there, and it'll just make you sick. So, a couple of different sort of real estate investments there, but
either end of the spectrum.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly.
Hey, Roo, you mentioned about Adelaide being one of the most livable cities in the world. I just want to run through this quickly. Melbourne, as you quite rightly pointed out, number one. Now, what they looked at were healthcare, infrastructure, and education. So they're looking at quite important issues here.
Well,
and as I said, it's an economic intelligence group that goes around the world and actually studies all of these things. You mentioned Sydney has crashed out of the top 10, so they're not happy. But I'll give you the list. This is the top five in the world. Melbourne, Vienna in Austria, and then surprisingly, three Canadian cities. Not saying because they're no good in Canada, but all, you know, to get three in the top five is a pretty big thing. Vancouver, Toronto, and Calgary, where you can wake up in Calgary to be about minus 46 degrees. I don't call that livable, to be honest. If you forget your overcoat and your hat and your gloves, you'll freeze your nuts off. So,
I don't think you'd forget it, though, if it was minus 46.
Yeah, probably. And then I'll tell you where you don't want to live. Bottom of the list, at 150, I think, is Damascus in Syria. They got their dramas at the moment. You don't want to live in Lagos in Nigeria. They came second last. Mm. And Tripoli in Libya. So they're the three joint. In fact, you'd get a real cheap apartment there right now, speaking of real estate.
Yeah, well, that gives us a bit of confidence. I think what was it out of Australian capital cities, we've got five in the top 20.
So Adelaide and Perth are in the top 10.
Yep.
So we're number six, Perth number seven. Yep. Although they reckon Perth's got no culture. So we're a cultural city.
Who said that?
Oh, this committee.
Well, the WA people wouldn't be too happy about that. I reckon it's a great place. But
I love Perth.
Shows how lucky we've got it in Australia. A lot of people say it when they go away. That's good to come back to. Well, proofs are there if that's accurate anyway.
And what about the power of our breakfast show, Roo? Yesterday we crossed to Chris Reason in Guam and we got it done. He's decided not to fire rockets at Guam now.
Yeah.
Well, he's changed his mind.
Good. Well done. Good news, Dit. So that's what's happening overnight.
Roo and Dit's for breakfast on 104.7 Triple M.
Roo, this will shock you, but apparently we get brainwashed by advertising.
Yeah.
No, there's a big article out today.
But
what they're saying is that they deliberately do things. So it's not just, can you go out and buy this car or go and buy this, you know, chocolate brand or whatever. Mm. They actually mount these campaigns over time. Now, for example, I'm going to give you a good example here of what happened. This is back in the 1930s.
Mm.
We were bluffed as a society into thinking that Santa Claus is some big, fat, red, puffy bloke with a big white beard.
Well,
now, Coca-Cola did this to us.
Exactly right, because prior to that, it's Santa had been depicted as anything from a scary little elf to a tall, slender man. But they did a campaign and they thought, we'll give him a bit of a pot belly and a bit red-faced and we'll...
A jolly old fella.
Jolly old fella. So that's sort of how we thought of Santa Claus from then on.
So that Coca-Cola responsible through advertising for making us all over the world believe that.
Yep.
So that's the power of advertising.
Yep.
Now, similarly, you might think this is a long bow to draw, but we've all been bluffed into through advertising. Someone through an ad campaign decades ago told us that you have to spend at least 3 months of your salary on an engagement ring.
Yeah, well, I've done a bit of research into it. It's way back in the 30s, De Beers, which is a company that wanted to try to make a game-changing marketing campaign to come up with the slogan, "A diamond is forever." Okay, so they organised lectures all across high schools across America and everywhere, and did heaps of promotion, spent a lot of money, and it paid off. Diamond sales rose 55% in the United States.
Mm.
From just after that, from when they started this for 3 years to 1941, and now we know that quite a few ladies want a diamond ring. and not just want a diamond ring, but actually want a big one. Otherwise, they're not very happy.
What's happened? This has all come to light because a girl's gone on social media this week complaining, would you believe, that her tight-ass boyfriend only spent $2,000 on her engagement
exactly
ring. And, of course, the rule of thumb is that it's got to be 3 months' salary. Now, I want to get a couple of experts in on this.
Do you want me to do some sums on that, Dits?
Yeah, go on.
That means the bloke's only making 10 grand a year.
Yeah, that's right.
He's on 200 bucks a week.
Now, we've got our experts here. Alice the Wag. Hello, Alice.
Good morning.
And Mel the Button Pusher.
Morning.
Experts.
Yeah.
No, not engaged.
We scoured the country and came up with you two.
God, it's light on.
Alice, surely the day Joel comes to you on bended knee, isn't it about the love he's got for you, not the size of the ring?
I would say it's maybe 50-50.
No! Wag! You material girl.
No, $2,000 is a bit stingy. If you're going to love me and you want me for forever.
See?
If you literally want me to put up with you forever, then, you know, put a little bit of a rock on my finger.
This is the new generation, Dits. They're happy with nothing except everything.
And do you know what? If you get engaged, the first question you get asked is, oh, my God, can I see the ring? So you don't want to be embarrassed.
But how do you know? How does
anyone know? Embarrassed?
What if it's so small?
Oh, hell.
How many big rings do you see on older ladies around?
Good point. No, now, Mel, the
and their marriages lasted forever.
What's your take on this, Mel?
Yeah, I suppose I'm not interested in jewellery very much in general. I don't wear any. I think by the time you're together and thinking about getting engaged, or you are getting engaged, that's kind of your money. It's not his money. So if you're saying you're spending thousands...
Well, what are you getting half before you're married?
Yeah. We cohabit these days long before we get engaged.
Yeah, true. That's true. Yeah,
so if he goes splurging 3 months' salary, then that's your resources being squandered on
a
rock.
It's a housing deposit.
That's right. Mm. It's rubbish.
So, Alice, the way you're going to look good, but you'll be broke.
She'll be renting, okay, but she'll have a massive ring. Her ring will be worth more than the house.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want a massive ring. I just want one.
Just mediumly massive.
Yeah, medium. Like, put some effort in, do some research, go and ask my best friend. She already has photos of what I want. Just spend quite a lot, but not heaps.
So you're happy to walk around the office and flash it off and go to all the girls, oh, look at this, look at this, look at this, but we're broke.
That's literally the whole, why else do you put a ring on it then if you don't do that?
Because you would love each other and
you
want
to get
married.
Love each other, then you don't need a ring. Just have love. Oh, gotcha.
Oh,
I got
you. Love?
No, I'm in love.
Okay. Yeah, just found out that fella who bought the $2,000 ring is on a six-figure wage. Oh, so he's on over
$100,000. Yes, I'd be so very angry.
So, Mel, the day that Danny comes to you...
On bended knee.
...and surprises you...
Yeah.
...and there's a massive rock, you're going to say, no, no, take it back. Take it back.
Too much.
Oh, not if he's already bought it. I'm sure there'll be a no-returns policy at the place.
What about if he comes with a burger ring and puts on your finger?
Even better. I love
Salt. Yeah. All right, there you go. The power of advertising. Just a reminder, $1,000 up for grabs just after 7 o'clock with the pressure test.
Ruin Dits for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Ruin, absolute tragedy in the northern part of South Australia yesterday, the mid-north, out near Yunta. The town's called Manor Hill. This is about a German backpacker. The story starts, she was 20 years of age. She came out to Australia, met a fella and married him. Her name's Tanya Ebert. Now, she's been missing for a couple of days, I think.
Yes.
Police are up there investigating. So police are in the area trying to investigate and find out exactly where she might be or what has happened. And as I think we've all heard in the news, that her husband took his life yesterday in front of the police officers.
Yeah, shot himself. So horrible stuff. Horrible, horrible stuff. I think lots going to come out. Here's a grab from yesterday.
Detectives believe there is a strong possibility that 23-year-old Tanya Ebert, her body is somewhere here on this remote property in South Australia's mid-north, following her disappearance 9 days ago. But their chances of finding her body took a major hit yesterday when her husband and suspected murderer Michael Burdon took his own life. That happened within minutes of major crime detectives fronting the media, revealing they believe that Tanya Ebert had been murdered. Now, before he died, Mr. Burdon did tell police that they'd had an argument on the night she disappeared 9 days ago. They were driving home from Adelaide when she stormed off out of the car. He kept going with their two sons in the car. He said that was the last time he saw her alive.
Now, the two little boys, I think, are aged under three, Roo.
Three and
two little boys. Yeah, this is just terrible. So that was Mark Mooney from Channel 7 speaking on Sunrise earlier this morning. He's going to join us live from Manor Hill just after 8 o'clock, and we'll find out the absolute latest in this terrible tragedy.
It is a terrible tragedy. Shocking stuff. Dits, will follow that later on, as you said.
104.7 Triple M.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Pressure point! Ruin Dids, $1,000 pressure test.
Time to give away $1,000, Ru. I love it when someone wins.
Yes.
Let's, where are we heading to?
We're going to Shido Park. G'day, James.
Morning, boys.
How are you, buddy?
Yeah, good, good. You?
Yeah, fantastic. What are you up to today?
I'm a massage therapist. I'm going to be looking after a few people today, making sure they're all feeling good.
Yeah, okay.
James, that's fantastic.
What do you specialise in? What body part?
Deep tissue and remedial, so that's usually all around the scapular, upper neck area.
That sounds painful, James.
No, it feels good.
Mm. Now, I actually might hire your services. I've always got a real stiff neck and sore shoulders. Where can I come and see you?
Come on down, Naturalism in Morpher Vale, Main South Road.
Righto, Morpher Vale. All right, can we meet halfway?
Oh, he travels. He'll travel, Dits.
Yeah, I'll travel for you.
What are you going to sore back neck for, Dits?
Carrying you. Yeah. Carrying you for the last few
exactly.
years. Boom, boom. You led me in beautifully. Hey, James, I'll give Alice the Wag your number, and I'm going to come and see you. What?
Yeah, it sounds good.
And he's got a wax chest too, so it'd be really nice and smooth. Righto, mate. You ready to win $1,000?
Yeah, let's do it.
10 correct answers in 30 seconds. We'll get it for you, mate. Give us 10 types of pasta.
Spaghetti, linguine, spaghetti, macaroni,
yep.
Roti.
What was that one?
Vegeroni. Pappardelle.
Yep.
Lasagna, is that
one, Kim? We'll give you that.
Ravioli, tortellini, fettuccine, penne, chili.
Yep, time.
Hang on. Before we go to the adjudicator, did you make a couple up in the middle there? What did you say? Vegetini?
Vegeroni.
Yeah, that's the colourful one, isn't it?
I don't know. That's the one I think you've got enough anyway.
All right, let's go to the adjudicator.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9.
Free massages all round.
10 correct.
Good on you, James.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Well done,
boys.
Yeah, it's a free massage.
no worries. Come on down. I'll look after you.
No, you got to travel to us, mate. Bring your table.
Good stuff. Well done, James. Stay on the line and Alice the Wag will get your details. And
thanks,
management listening, that was Roo's idea to do
pasta
today.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It was not mine.
Apparently we're a bit over budget, Roo.
Well, you got to start listening to me, you guys.
All right.
Well done. Congratulations to James. Another $1,000 to a lucky listener.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Gary Megan, and I do a little show on Podcast One called A Plate to Call Home, and it's about fascinating people all centred around food. This is a show for foodies, but it's more than that. It's a show about the people and the stories behind food. I think you know that I'm obsessed by food. Everything in my life revolves around it, and I love nothing better than to spend a little time talking about people that are equally as passionate, sharing their stories and getting to know what makes them tick. It's called A Plate to Call Home, and it's available on the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com.au.
Triple M.
Roo, as we mentioned earlier this morning, we have been named in the top 10 of the most livable cities in the world.
We're even fifth, Dits. We're way inside the top 10, but we're joint with someone. We have to share it with Calgary in Canada.
No, that's not on. That is not on.
We're better than them, aren't we?
I've been to Calgary. Do you know, how can it be livable? Minus 45 degrees, seriously.
How do your dingle-dangles go in minus 46?
You're not exactly going down to the park for a picnic, are you, when it's minus 45? Yeah. How do you call that livable? Who are the idiots that put this list together?
Yeah.
I want to get to the bottom of this, Roo.
Yeah.
What we've done, we've rung a radio station in Calgary. I want to find
out
just how...
And we're popping Calgary and we've...
Well, I believe in honesty. I want to find out how livable this place is. Adam is the station manager. Now, I can't read. What's the radio station called there, Roo? Have you got that in front of you?
CJSW 90.9 FM.
See, even their radio stations are difficult to pronounce. There you go. That's how unlivable it is. Adam, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's it going?
What's so good about Calgary?
Well, other than not being Adelaide, Oh, yeah, I heard you guys leading up to it. You say talking about minus 45 and all that kind of nonsense. We haven't had minus 45 weather in decades, but we do get four full seasons. We do provide work experience for all your countrymen at our ski resorts. That's definitely a thing. And we also have the best campus and community radio station in the nation here in Canada, being CJSW 90.9 FM.
So what is the weather over there then if it's not minus 46? So give us
right now, because we're at the height of summer, being a northern hemisphere and all, we're presently about 27 degrees.
Nice.
That's perfect.
Now, what about in winter? Yeah, how cold does it get?
Well, last winter was the first real winter we've had in a while, and it was about minus... It got to minus 20 for maybe 2 weeks out of 6 months, but normally it hovers between 5 to 10 degrees on the high end, and in the low end it gets about minus 10, minus 15.
What do you do when it's minus 20? Give us a few, you know, if you're a tourist and you're coming
over.
Tell us
how livable that is.
Yeah, come on.
Well, we do have a ton of, like, great attractions for, you know, people that love the outdoors. As I mentioned earlier, there's ski hills, there's ice hockey, you know, all sorts of activities like that, but there's also, you know, world-class cultural institutions. Calgary is the home of the new National Music Center in Canada, which is really
hell,
really
you have
slick.
Music over there. Hell.
There's where we've got fire and the wheel and electricity and everything. It's great.
You have electricity.
No
Portuguese man of war.
Shit, you've got us. Bloody hell, bloody electricity.
Yeah,
but there's tons of cultural opportunities, and there's a really, really great music scene in this town too. I think, you know, in addition to the National Music Center, we are the home of numerous festivals, be it for music, but film.
Yeah, you mentioned
art,
music a few times. You're pinning your hat on that a bit. Now, what about? Isn't it true that you have big rodeos over there? I see a lot of people in Calgary with those big Texan cowboy hats as well. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. That we have a kind of a county fair called the Calgary Stampede. It's an international rodeo that attracts cowboys from as far away as your part of the world. And they come here for, you know, win big prize money and stuff like that. That's, you know, you get a lot of people at that time. We're a city of 1.2 million people. And at that time, everyone dresses up like a cowboy. It's cowboy Halloween. That's the shorthand.
What about the girls?
Yeah, cowboys and cowgirls.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a equal opportunity cowboy fest. Anyone who has a head that can hold a 10-gallon hat is totally fine for it.
Well, you've convinced us. We're going to stay in Adelaide, Adam. Mate, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Have fun today.
Good on you, mate.
Now, seriously, Roo.
Oh, come on.
You reckon we got Calgary covered or what?
Oh, easy.
Hey?
Minus 20.
Hey, we got music.
Cowboys. Culture.
Music festivals.
I was a sleeve armor.
Bloody hell.
Hey? Stick to good old Adelaide.
I think we won that battle.
Mick Molloy joins Ruin Dits.
Guys want to be me, girls want to do me. I'm Mickey.
On this Thursday morning, a very good morning, Mick Molloy.
Hello, guys. How are we all?
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks, Mick.
Now, front bar tonight being a Thursday, front bar on Channel 7. What's happening tonight, Mick?
Styx is the big guest tonight. Any questions I should be asking that man?
Styx.
Anything you can think of off the top of your head?
Yeah. What about the night, the State of Origin game, when he got caught in traffic and the police had to give him an escort and he went on and kicked 10 against the Big V? he nearly didn't get to the game because he was stuck in traffic. It was unbelievable. And it was he was nervous. He was a young boy. And tell you what, imagine if he had got there on time. I can't remember. About 87, somewhere around there.
Oh, I can't wait. That's a great question. I'll be asking it for you. Sergeant Chilaro will be on. It'll be a load of fun.
Yeah,
so I'm looking forward to it, boys. Hey, are you up for a bit of this?
What's that?
Harden up. Here we go. Firstly, Bernard Tomic. Harden up. Have you heard? This is the latest. This is the latest regarding Bernard Tomic. Well, he has played so badly and pulled out of so many tournaments, he now has to qualify to play for tournaments. So in his efforts to play as little tennis as possible, he now has to go and qualify so that he can then get into a tournament so he can pull out of it and get his appearance money.
He's world number 17, isn't he, these days? How does he have to qualify? Unbelievable.
He is a giant knob.
He is.
So that's as bad as it gets. What about Tom Cruise?
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
If I see Tom Cruise banging on again about how he does his own stunts, I am going to go cocoa friggin' bananas. The guy, if he falls off a bar stool, he rings the press and says, oh, I've just been damaged in a stunt. I've been on a movie set. Doing a stunt is not dangerous. Jumping up and down on Oprah's couch was more dangerous than performing a stunt on a film set.
Yeah. I saw that. He had that many harnesses on. You can't possibly hurt yourself.
Mate, he had three harnesses on. He could have wedgied himself.
Yeah.
He had two braces. The guy's a giant idiot. Richie Port!
Oh, what's he done?
It's taken him a full month to get back on the bike after breaking his back.
What a week.
What? Oh, jeez, you crash your bike at 100 k's into a stone wall and you milk it for all you got. And now we're all supposed to stand around and applaud because you're back on your bike within a month. Hard nut.
Richie.
Seriously, mate. Yeah. What are you doing?
He's not tough.
I mean, he's Sookie Lala'd in the first place. I would have got straight back on the bike and continued the ride myself with no memory of it.
Exactly.
What the about string. This? Anyone who's ever suffered from an ice cream headache. Yeah, who need to harden up. Listen to this guy. Mickey Sudo in Japan has become the world ice cream eating record holder, having 6.5 pints in like under 6 minutes. Now, have you ever had a cold headache, an ice cream headache?
Oh, yeah.
This would be a beauty, wouldn't it? This would be like hitting yourself on the head with a hammer for about 2.5 minutes. How good's that? You know the only place you'd never get an ice cream headache for eating the ice cream too quickly? That'd be at the Coogee Bay Hotel. Do you remember that guy?
Well, what happened there?
Well, that's the chef who thought it was hilarious to serve ice cream covered in human feces to his customers.
Oh, no.
I think Matt Preston still ate it. Oh. But I think everyone else.
Could you, mate?
There's an episode of MasterChef I'd like to see, by
the way. I dare you.
You know what I feel sorry for if that catches on? Mr. Whippy. Oh, he's going to take him ages to fill that coat. Hey, what about Luke Dalhouse? If you can't take a boot to the face when you're not suspecting it, what's the world coming to?
Toby, that's right. I'm so lucky.
Well,
damaged his reputation.
Damaged his reputation. His retinas could have done serious damage.
Damaged his boots as well.
Toby Green's boots. You should give him another set of boots. I mean, if you can't kick a bloke fair in the head with your footy boot, what's the game coming to?
No. What are they going to rub out next? Exactly.
Anyway, Cocaine Cassie. She needs to harden up.
Why?
Got beaten by her own plea arrangement. You know, she knew she was in trouble when she found out the nickname of her judge was Firing Squad Freddy.
Prone to a bullet, is he?
That's right. This could all happen.
She might want to take notes just to remember what the last story was she told, I think. That's her drama. She can't remember.
She'll be right. What could go wrong?
You haven't signed Dusty yet, Mick. What's going on?
You do this all the time, mate. I don't understand why you do this. As my reading is, he's signed, he's sealed, he's delivered.
Is that from your mechanic?
With who?
Isn't that who you got your mail from?
Third-hand information. However, I believe he's going all right. How's Jake Lever?
No, he's gone.
Ah,
McGovern's gone. Cameron's gone.
Cameron's gone. Cupboard's bare over there in Adelaide.
It is bare.
Wheels are falling off.
We'll win the flag and then we'll have a bare cover.
You get beaten by Swans in your own back garden this year. My team that was sipping six.
Hey, how did you go against the Geelong B grade last week?
But you know what? Those bunch of cheats, we would have won that. But
apparently
you're going an hour and a half down the road and play in front of 30,000 hillbillies. With two cheating umpires. I mean, what are you supposed to do?
Why didn't
it's
you
like kicking into a six-goal breeze before you get off the bus.
How they are whingy is your coach?
Now, 20-7 free kicks at halftime, fellas. You do the math.
Hey, get in
Don't
front.
Don't play dirty then, that's right.
Yeah,
well, do you know what? This conversation's over.
All right, Nick, we'll see you on the front bar tonight. Channel 7. Right. 8:30 on Channel 7, the front bar.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast on 104.7 Triple M.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. Thought I'd made a mistake, Ru. I read the AFL program this week, of course, wanting to see where my team is playing this weekend. And I'm sure it's a misprint. Port Western Bulldogs, it says here Ballarat.
Yeah.
What the hell's that about?
Well, that's because you can't pull a crowd to your games anymore.
Oh,
so I thought we'd shift to a smaller ground. And because it's at a smaller ground,
we
like
stop
Ballarat,
at Ballarat on our way to Melbourne normally.
Tent City, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
But
that's it.
Because it is at Ballarat, we thought we'd get a man who grew up in Ballarat. He knows more about Ballarat than anyone else. He's Fox Footy's Danny Frawley. He joins us now. G'day, Spud.
Good morning, Roo. Good morning, Dits. Be very careful of that tent set up there, Dits. There's two rules when you're growing up in Ballarat when you played footy.
Yeah.
It was hit or be hit.
And, right.
The former wasn't great, so you soon knew how to get on the front foot. So
you get in first.
Just keep those tent messages to Adelaide. Don't sort of mention it going through the main street of Ballarat.
Right. Now, when we get there, when my family rolls up there in Ballarat, is it an oval where do we park our cars around the fence, or what do we do?
There'll be none of that now. North Ballarat and the city council and the government done a great job, actually. $30 million dollar facility up there now. The seating, there's only seating for 6,000, and I'm hoping there's going to be sleety rain, a little bit of snow. 40 knot breeze from the southerly, which could blow the dog off a chain, because Ballarat really needs to turn on the weather that made footballers one to be pretty hard at it, because you had to be, and pretty resilient, because, gee, you got cold up there playing as a lad.
Spud, can you remember any stories of how cold it was when you were a youngster playing in Ballarat?
Well, Rude, probably like you, because it was a little bit bigger, I was sort of in the under-16s for a couple of years, but then have a spell in the reserves and play in the seniors on the same day. And those bitterly cold days, like I can remember one day playing for East Ballarat when I went from Bungaree, and it was sort of, I think it was about the 18th of September, and it was snowing. The ground, when we got there, the ground was white. And then the wind started. So you can imagine the wind off the snow. The crown jewels, seriously, were basically they were just like little shredded
walnuts,
ball bearings. Anyway, at half time, the old fellas, because I'm 16 and you're shivering, and the old fellas, get this in here, son, and all of a sudden, two bottles of, I can remember it vividly, I think it was Stone's Green Ginger Wine.
Stoney's Green Ginger.
That was top shelf. They were the expensive stuff.
So the imbibing would start at half time. And I must admit, as a kid, I thought, gee, that tasted okay. And it was really throat burn. But when it went down to the gut, it did form you up. But I can remember Lockett, you can see why he's such a great kid, because the conditions up there was always wet. And look, when you see the Crouch boys, I look at them and they're doing a great job, because the grounds are always wet up there. So what happens is, the ball doesn't bounce. So if you don't want to win the hard ball, you just don't get it.
Yep.
So, you look at the history of St Kilda players, because pre-draft, Ballarat's area was St Kilda. So you had guys like Muir, Greg Burns, Jeff Cunningham. You had, obviously Lockett. These guys were absolutely guns at winning the ball.
Hey, what about some of your trips to Moorabbin from there?
Well, they were great, Roo, because we had... in one car you'd have the heavies, and you'd have the young lads, Odgers and Keel, and the guys that, look, they'd get the job done, but they were sort of bits and piece places. So, but the lead car was always Lockett, Frawley, Burns, Muir, and Jeff Cunningham. So, gee, I'll tell you what, even when we might have been going a little bit too quick on the freeway to Moorabbin, the cops would pull us over and look in the car and say, okay, on your way, guys. I'm too afraid to give these guys a speeding ticket because they've got that look about them. So we would go down. We'd train, pretty hard. And, the Melbourne guys were sort of a little bit wary of us because we had our own little clique. And it was pretty hard to argue because most of it, even though we didn't have a lot of success, most of the better players came from our area. So we got the runaround race a bit. But the trips on the way home were, and I tell the current St Kilda players down there now, I'm down there one day a week, but I think I'm a Martian because we'd have, we'd get in the car at Moorabbin at about 7:30 after training. And then we'd call the Bay Street Port Melbourne Hotel and they'd have five beautiful porterhouse steaks and a couple of frothies. And then we'd just grab a couple of travellers just to sort of wet the thirst on the way home. You know, we'd have one designated driver. But there's some nights there we'd stop at Melton because there was no freeway in those days. And then, you know, Plugger would want to, you know, get a bit hungry again. So he'd want to get a big pizza and a big packet of Sandboy chips. And then it was sort of Belan, Gordon, Wallace, Bungaree. And when we went to those pubs, basically we just sat down and didn't really have to buy a beer. And
so you're pretty professional in those days. Well, it
well very well. Professional. Very professional.
Gee whiz.
Because we'd get up early the next morning and walk it off.
Come on.
Mate, I'm telling you now, Tony Lockett in 1987, the only full forward ever to win a Brownlow, Darryl Baldock thought the trip down from Ballarat to Moorabbin, which was about 2 to 2.5 hours sometimes, said, guys, you Ballarat guys can train at North Ballarat on a Tuesday. So we would train at North. We'd train for about half an hour, and then the Ballarat Greyhounds were on, so then we'd just get stripped and go and have a few bets on the Greyhounds.
Spud.
And what's that?
Is it true that you went from Moorabbin to Ballarat on the top of a panel van one day because Plugger didn't stop?
Oh, look. Look, someone, we were pretty competitive. and what happened was we'd say, you know, the old silly games you play truth or dare. And I said, well, mate, I reckon I can stay on the top of your panel van from Moorabbin to Ballarat. And it was July, and I wasn't overly prepared. I'd only had the St Kilda tracksuit on and a beanie. And it was a roof rack that you sort of couldn't roll off because it had the sides on it. But it's fair to say for 2 hours, because the bet was $10. So, like...
You were like Team Wolf on top of the panel.
I actually made it, believe it or not, after, you know, the car going at some stage a little bit too quick, then slammed the anchors on to try and sort of get my big frame off the top of the car. But when I got to Ballarat, mate, we had to get a chisel and hammer because my eyebrows and eyes had 3 inches of icicles on it. But nah, look,
so it'll be cold this weekend then.
Yeah, no, you've painted a real nice picture for us.
No, mate, I'm telling you now, all the Port guys, I'm heading up for Fox Footy. I'm looking forward to it. This is what I've got on. I've got, you know, the Under Armour stuff, the skins. Then I've got my Fox Footy suit. Then I've got a jacket. And, mate, I've got gloves in the pockets. I'm not sure whether I'm going to wear them, but I can tell you now, if they don't rug up, you'll be like rigor mortis by a quarter time. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's great for Ballarat. I think it's great that the Bullies have got behind it. And look, let's be brutally honest. The Port supporters, they'll think they're in heaven in Ballarat. Let's face it.
We got to go. But yeah, thanks.
Right.
Well, when we arrive in town, all the Port people listening ask for Spud. All right, just put everything on his account because he's the king.
No, I'm very happy for them to come over, but just leave the chairs in the grandstand and all those other stuff. We've got a nice stadium. Let's make sure it leaves that way, Dick.
They're very honest people.
I like the Port supporters. I love them.
The one and only Spud Frawley. Ruin Dits here on Triple M.
Ruin Dits for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Absolute tragedy in the north of South Australia, mid-north. We're talking near Yunta, a place called Manor Hill. And yesterday, we know that a man took his own life in front of police, would you believe? Two young children in the house, and his wife is still missing. Let's go to Channel 7 reporter Mark Mooney, who's on the spot. Mark, good morning. Thanks for joining us. And what do we know this morning? Any advancements on this story?
Yeah, morning, boys. Well, we've just heard that police will be holding a press conference back in Adelaide at about 9 o'clock, so we do hope that we'll get a few answers to some of those questions we have. But what we do know is that here on this property, it's called Almina Park Station. We're about 400 k's northeast of Adelaide, middle of nowhere. This is the station where Michael Burden, his wife Tanya Ebert, and their two little boys live. Sadly, at 3 o'clock yesterday, Mr. Burden took his own life. Detectives were here at the property searching for any sign of his wife, who's been missing for 9 days now. somehow, after being questioned at length by police, he's managed to get hold of a gun and take his own life. His two little boys were home at the time. Thankfully, they weren't hurt, and now they're with relatives. But a commissioner's inquiry is underway into that shooting. It's being treated as a death in custody. While the search, we believe, continues for Tanya Ebert's body, but we are hoping for an update on that at 9 o'clock this morning.
Okay, so what, she was supposed to have got out a car in the city, and that's his story, that she got out there and then he hasn't seen her again. Is that right?
Yeah, his story, he told police before he died that... it was actually just north of Roseworthy. They were on their way home on the Tuesday night last week. They'd had a day out in the city with their kids. There's some CCTV of them leaving the SA Museum earlier that day. He says they had an argument in the car. She was unhappy in their marriage, apparently, and had told him that she was considering leaving him for someone else in New South Wales.
For another bloke?
Well, possibly. That's what police said at their press conference yesterday. They've had an argument. She's got out of the car near Roseworthy and started walking along the highway. He says that's the last time he saw her. Of course, you know, we don't know what to believe now. This is his version of events. Now he's taken his own life. So perhaps many questions we won't have answered.
Moon, some reports this morning I've seen are calling him a suspected murderer, though. So police are obviously, for that to come out, are confident that he has done something untoward.
Oh, well, I mean, even before he took his own life, police were basically all but saying that he was their prime suspect. They wouldn't rule it out at the press conference, but certainly they said, you know, Des Bray from Major Crimes said that always in a case like this, we look at the people who were, A, last with the victim, and B, those closest to them. Now that he's taken his own life, that's only kind of firmed up that suspicion and that theory that he did kill her. We don't know yet whether he gave police information on where her body might be before he killed himself.
Mark, have you spoken to any of the neighbouring farmers or anyone from the local community about this fella and, you know, what's he like and what sort of happened prior to the last week or so?
Yeah, certainly. I went into Nanna Hill, which is about 14 kilometres from the couple's property last night. There's only a population of about 6 people there, so while their properties are spread far and wide, they are a tight-knit community. A woman there said she knows the family well, and she just said to me that Manor Hill is in mourning tonight. She said there was no sign of anything being wrong here with the couple. They didn't know anything about these kind of marital problems that they were having. But certainly we'll catch up with more of them today and see what they have to say. But certainly there didn't seem to be any indication that something was wrong here.
Good on you, Moons. Thanks so much for joining us. Mark Mooney there from Channel 7. His report will be on 7 News tonight. Rue, what about her family? I believe the parents are on their way out to Australia, but I've had kids travel. I'm sure yours will in time to come as well. And you do think about that. You know, when you, I remember reading things like, and I'm just speaking out aloud here as a parent. I remember a young Australian girl losing her life in Croatia. And then you think, God, my kids are on a Kentucky tour in Croatia. As a parent, Rue, it is just frightening to have your kids that far away. And that's what this German couple are going through right now.
Yep. I feel for everyone involved, the people who know them. And in those tight farming communities, you know, that's exactly, you rely on your neighbours. That's all they've got. As I said, there's only 6 people in the town. So, this is very sad. And we'll find out more, as Mark said, at 9 o'clock today.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast here on Triple M on this Thursday morning. Hey, Roo, the Yarra Council, quite controversially, although some people probably think it isn't controversial, but they are the first ones now as a group, as a recognised body, to come out and say they will not celebrate Australia Day next year.
Yeah, Victorian Council, the Yarra Council. So 74,000 people in that area, they've decided to not celebrate. It's sort of been out and about for a while, hasn't it, the Australia Day? Do we celebrate it then? The Indigenous community look at it as Invasion Day.
Yep.
It's come up the last probably 2 or 3 years, has it, really strongly about people have spoken out about it. And, you know, we know Adam Goods spoke about it a long time ago. We've had people quite aggressive on that day, and it's sort of taken the shine off it a little bit, where I guess 5 or 10 years ago it was just a great day, and well, we thought it was anyway. We didn't. I was certainly not aware of all the racism stuff that was probably brewing underneath and has been for a long, long time. So I'd never even thought of it. But what's happened?
We've changed our national anthem, the wording as well.
Yes, they have changed that.
Now, a couple of media commentators have weighed into this. First of all, let's go to Steve Price from The Project on Channel 10.
The people that have overreacted at the Yarra City Council, they got 74,000 ratepayers carry in that council. Of that 74,000, 0.4% of their ratepayers are Indigenous. And what they did is they went out and asked 388 people and they changed the rules based on that. I think Malcolm Turnbull, with the support of Bill Shorten, I should say, and the support of the Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews today, are quite right in saying Australia Day is the 26th of January and the citizenship ceremony should stay on that day, including in that council.
Very unusual to have Malcolm Turnbull, Bill Shorten and Daniel Andrews all agreeing on one topic. Usually they take sides for the sake of it, it feels like, anyway. But where do you sit on this one, Ditz?
Well, for me, Australia Day has always been, we are Australia, we're Australians, and we love it. It's summer, we have a long weekend, and we go to the cricket, or we have a barbecue, or we do something like that. I'm celebrating the fact that I'm Australian and I love my country. We're not as patriotic as the Americans, for example. So I think it's great that we do have Australia Day.
Well, it's got bigger every year.
Yeah, but I never, ever consider that we might have angered or annoyed the Indigenous people at the time. And so, therefore, I don't ever feel that I'm doing anything wrong because, to me, it's we're all Australians. Now, quite clearly, we need to listen to them because they have come out, as you said, in the last couple of years and said they don't like the day, they don't enjoy it. So we have to listen, don't we?
It's completely the opposite, really, for them, isn't it? They look at it as Invasion Day, and you can understand why they do.
What do you think?
Well, I actually think we probably should consider changing it. What I hate at the moment is that we're arguing over so many different things in Australia, and it would be brilliant to be able to celebrate Australia and celebrate Australia Day on one day where Indigenous people and white Australians can be happy and actually celebrate it for the right reasons. So what I would be annoyed about is if every Australia Day in the future, if we kept it on January 26, if every year we had protests and arguments and demonstrations and all of the above, if that's going to continue to happen, then I think we should change the date. And I'm not sure what the exact date is, I think we need to do it so that everyone can be happy. And listen, I know January 26 is a special day, but does it really matter? It doesn't cross my mind. I just think of Australia Day as a day that we celebrate Australia. It doesn't matter to me that January 26 is the day the first fleet landed that makes it special for me.
No, I tend to agree. Roo, let's hear from another media commentator. This is Karl Stefanovic.
But I've changed my mind. Having spoken to several people from those communities, I empathise. The 26th is a rubbish day for a party anyway. Whoever had a party on the 26th of anything? So my suggestion is move Australia Day to the 1st of January. That way we get to combine New Year's with another party.
Don't like that.
That doesn't make
one.
A lot of sense.
No, I don't like Karl Stefanovic's idea, but I'm happy to move it to another day. I guess there'd be a lot of people out there who don't want to move it, who are sort of set in their ways. And
do we have to change the name? Do we have to change the name of the day, Roo?
I don't think we have to change the name of the day at all. I think if it was on January the 26th, the Indigenous would like you to. But I think if you change it to another day, Dits, and it suits Indigenous and everyone else that's in Australia, I think it works for everyone, as far as I see it anyway.
What do you think about this? Give us a ring, 133353. Do we need to change the day, the name of it, the date of it? What's the perfect solution here? Because you know what will happen, Roo? We've just seen this in America that there'll be those that, because it's simple for you and I to say, let's just change it. If we are upsetting the Indigenous population, let's change it. But will there be the white supremacists then come out and say, bugger that, we're not changing for anybody? I mean, we live in a crazy world at the moment, don't we? There's so many crazy people out there that want to protest against whatever the norm is.
104.7 Triple M.
133353, Australia Day, do we change it? Do we change the name or the date or do we just get rid of it altogether? What's the solution?
Let's go to McLaren Vale. What do you think, Rod?
Oh, I just think it's another case of political correctness gone mad.
Is it political correctness?
Oh, look, most of the Indigenous people I know couldn't really care less what day it is, as long as we all don't miss out on our public holiday. It's just a small, rabid minority making all the noise, the same as everything that goes wrong in the world these days. And we're pandering to minorities again.
Well, you say a minority. We've got to be careful.
Yeah, I don't think they're a minority, are they?
Population a minority. They're a bit more than that. Well, they're a lot more than that. But I understand why what you're saying, Rod, but we can't call them a minority. And I think, yeah, they've got to have a voice, and they do. Let's go to Shane at Strathalbyn. Good morning, Shane.
How you going, fellas?
What do you think, Shane?
What do you think?
Good on Yarra Council for doing this. Yeah, you can't really celebrate it, you know, as an invasion day. It's just wrong.
So you'd change it?
Definitely, yes.
And
definitely.
What's your alternative, Shane? What should we do?
Oh, mate, you just got to find a day, you know, where you've got beautiful weather so we can have our barbecues and a frothy, one or two if you like. And, yeah, celebrate it as a nation, not just, you know, as a culture.
Yep. No.
Now, Roo, one question I've got, and this is a serious question, if there is someone, if there's an Indigenous person listening that can answer this for me, are they angry just over everything, like the fact that we came here in the first place? I know about Invasion Day and why they think it's Invasion Day. I understand But could we have a day where we all, you know, have a barbecue together and we say, yep, we're all Australians, we're all going to get on and live happily ever after, or are they angry in general about what happened?
Well, like, I'd like to think it was just the day that was the issue for them. Yeah. I mean, if it's not, if it's more than that, well, then leave it as it is.
Yeah, then we've got an issue.
Yeah.
Haven't we?
And we're not going to fix that ever. Let's go to Regency Park. G'day, Russell.
Yeah, how are you guys?
What do you think?
They need to leave it right where it is. In fact, it's not all Indigenous people that have got the problem. Yesterday on radio, I was in Melbourne, and the first female Indigenous politician, I can't think of her name, she came on and she said...
Not Nova Paris, is it? Or?
No, she's not in politics anymore. Mm. But she came on and she was on the radio and she said, leave it where it is. She said, don't change it. Still have Australia Day. Now, that's an Indigenous person. So it's not all Indigenous people who are doing it. And the Yarra Council, they were stripped yesterday of their right to hold citizenship ceremonies because they were doing a politically motivated thing. And that's the issue with the council. They shouldn't. You're not allowed to make Australian citizenship ceremonies political. And they did that by saying, oh, we're going to hold it on a different day.
Is the lady's name Linda Burney? Is that it?
That name rings a bell. Is she from the council?
No, but I think she was our first Indigenous female politician, though, I think.
Yeah, well, I do remember hearing that name. But basically, the council lost their rights to hold any more citizenship ceremonies because they were turning it in, they were using it as some kind of political football.
Oh, well, we can't be doing that. Let's go to Greenacres. G'day, Steve.
How you going, mate? Should we
change Australia Day or not?
Oh, come on, mate. Let's change Christmas Day while we're at it. I mean, come on, man. You know, when someone uses the word minority, it's not being rude towards Indigenous or anyone else for that matter. But if enough people waved a placard about changing Christmas Day to a different day because it suits them, is that the next thing?
Well, I don't think it is. I think it's Christmas.
They're not related, though, are they?
I think Christmas is different.
No, it's not about being related, though, is it? It's just about saying that enough people stamp their feet. You know, if people walked around saying, you know, negative things about Aboriginals on Australia Day, you know, then they're just idiots. They're going to do it on any day of the week, mate. You know, Australia Day's been Australia Day for 200 years. Let's stick with it.
Yep, they haven't had a voice for that long either.
They don't think it is, though. The statement you just made, they disagree with it. So that's why we're having this discussion. Jamie at Smithfield. G'day, Jamie.
How you going?
Good, Jamie.
Thank you, Jamie. What do you think?
Look, I believe that we should be looking at changing the day.
Yep.
And I believe that we probably should look at the date that the 1967 referendum was held.
Yeah,
and that was when Aboriginal people started to be recognised as people in our constitution.
Yeah, what date was that? Do you remember?
The 27th of May, 1967. It was.
Okay. Jamie, are you Indigenous?
I am. Yes.
Okay. Enlighten us then a bit further. Do you think if that was to happen, if we could get that through Parliament, would that make you happy? And go back to, I don't know if you were listening, but I said a couple of minutes ago to Roo, are Indigenous people upset in general with us? Like, you know, let's not even just talk about Invasion Day. Is it the fact that we came and took over everything here in Australia at the time?
Yeah, look, it all depends on I guess, who you're talking to how that individual feels about white Australians invading Australia. But for me, on a personal level, look, I'd be happy to take it away from a day that we see as what we feel is Invasion Day.
Yep.
And put it to a day that's neutral.
Mm.
But you know, prior to 1967, we were thought of as being flora and fauna. So
yeah.
You know, basically, you know, looked at as being flowers and grass rather than actual people.
Yep.
Could be a wet Barbie on the 27th of May.
Could be. But it'd be good for the races, I would have thought.
Yeah. Jamie, thanks for calling in. And you know what?
No
if
worries.
You're listening and we talk about these issues, please call in again because we can never stop learning. So thanks for calling.
No worries. Have a good day, guys.
Good on you. Now, there you go, Roo, 27th of May. Now, I know it's probably not the best time of the year, but that's a significant day for Indigenous people, obviously.
Yeah,
so
it makes a bit of sense.
Yep.
104.7 Triple M. The hard-hitting topics. The big issues.
Well, not really, but we are going deep inside the female psyche.
Ruin Dits Angels.
Good morning, Angels.
Good morning, Ruin Dits.
Righto, the panel this morning, we've got Batesy, who, her man's back from Iraq. She's got him in a headlock, won't let him out of the room.
Big.
We got the richest new wife in Australia, Catherine Lambert. Morning, Catherine.
Yep.
Oh, no, nothing from Catherine. Righto. Hello, Catherine.
Catherine, say hi.
Say hello. Hi.
Oh, this is working well this morning. And Alice the Wag.
Good morning.
Righto, Roo, what's our first topic?
Our first topic is we've been talking about engagement rings. What is the right amount to spend on an engagement ring? Because one girl got a $2,000 ring, a diamond, and she was not happy at all about what her fiancé had bought her. And there's some talk that she should get a ring worth about 2 to 3 months' salary. So that's what they're talking about. That's the rule that some of these girls have come up with these days. So, Angels, what do you think about engagement rings?
Well, can I just make
No, we've heard from you already.
We've
heard from you already. Let's go to Batesy.
Well, I sort of sit in the middle of this. So I think a $2,000 ring is not enough, especially when my boyfriend will spend $2,000 on a bull bar for his car. So
yeah, but
that's
that could
safety,
save
though.
You $50,000 and your life.
Yeah. No.
A ring's not going to save your life.
I save his life, like, every day.
No,
this man goes and fights to defend our nation and our honour in Iraq, puts his life on the line, and you want 3 months of his salary for a ring.
On your finger.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Righto, Catherine, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's got nothing to do with how many months, you know, salary it is. It's more about the thought that goes into it and the proposal and... No, I do. Why are you laughing?
Oh,
and, you know, and some design.
Hardly hold your
like
finger
if
up.
You,
yeah, have a look at the rock on your finger.
Weighing you down.
It's like Ayers Rock.
It's actually not. You're not creating a good picture. No, it's about, you know, if someone's gone and bought a massive rock and not actually put any thought into the design, they've walked past a window and they've seen this rock and think that will impress her. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. I think if someone's put thought into it, how he's going to propose, he's actually spent time designing the ring, he's asked friends, he's, you know, taken your an old ring and got your ring size and made it all perfect, that's all the beautiful part about it.
Yep, okay. Now right, back to you, Alice, for the second time
today.
Oh, you've
come back to me, have you?
For the second time today.
No, I'm off you. No, you don't get my opinion on that one. Sorry.
Well, now listen, for a young lady, a young lad out there, $2,000's a lot of money.
Can I just say though, this is a story because the guy who paid $2,000 had a six-figure salary.
Yes.
$100,000.
So, yes,
still $2,000's a lot of money.
No,
after
it's not.
Tax,
it's not.
After
it's really
saving.
Not.
No, it needs to be proportionate to income.
Yeah, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is it? What is he, the rich
year? Hang on a minute. If someone's a billionaire, how can it be proportionate to income? Like, you couldn't fit that in your finger. You can't get a ring.
Like
and
you.
And you're not going to be happy if you marry someone who's on minimum wage.
No, but if my partner was earning six figures and he bought me a $2,000 ring, I'd be like, I don't know if that's a real sign of commitment. I'm just not sure.
Oh, so what are you in it for?
Is a sign of commitment, is it?
What are you in it for?
I just think it's the seriousness.
What's if he's
of the
bought
thing?
A massive house and he's taken you on a beautiful holiday?
It's all circumstantial. Agreed.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
In the end, love trumps all.
Mm.
Right. I'm joking. Get me a massive ring, whoever marries me.
She's joking. Get
Joel,
her a massive
are you listening?
Right.
Righto, Roo. Next topic.
MILF is a term that gets bandied around.
Mums, I'd like to cuddle.
Mums, I'd like to cuddle. Yes, exactly right, Ditz.
Should call it MILF.
Is it offensive, the term? Do you find it offensive if you were to be called
or is it flattering?
A MILF?
I'd bloody love it. If I'm putting on all that weight, having a baby, and then it comes out and someone calls me a MILF, hello world, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, that's good. So you're comfortable with it?
One of my friends actually once said about you, Ru, that you're a DILF.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
We're
talking about MILFs here.
Okay.
Righto, Batesy.
I would love it. I just think, not being a mum yet, but I just think that's the highest compliment you could get. Like, just from a stranger or just from someone who knows you. My mum is a MILF, and she froths on the idea of people talking about it.
Oh, your mum?
My mum loves it.
Oh, Batesy.
Yeah,
not,
I don't mean this to be a sick question, but just for the sake of this segment, show us your photo of your mum. No, just to put it into perspective, just so we know.
Yeah,
okay,
you'll find
up.
It. Righto. Catherine?
Well, I actually didn't know what it was. So after I had my first child, someone said that, and I said, like, what does that mean? Then they told me. I was so happy.
So you got called
because after you've had a baby and you feel like all mummy.
That's right.
And then especially it was a young guy. It was actually a young footballer. And I was like, Still got it.
Yeah, girl.
Good work.
What I've learnt this morning, our girls here, the angels aren't shallow at all.
No. They're really genuine girls.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, angels.
Thanks.
See you, girls.
Ruined Dits for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Now, Ru, on the weekend down at Alberton Oval, the mecca of football, there's a big event taking place. Now, this bloke that's about to join us used to rip us apart out at the parade, then down at Alberton, and always at Footy Park as well. He was a superstar. Michael Aish, good morning.
Dits, Ru, look, I don't know about that because I know one thing. I certainly got ripped apart a fair bit myself.
At least you didn't have a wall like Nord Oval where they used to push him into.
Exactly.
And Aishy, that was just my grandma when you were running out onto the field as well.
Hey, don't worry, mate. I do remember one very vividly before I was watching the twos that I got a fair bit of abuse from a 70-year-old beautiful Port supporter walking up the steps of the grandstand while I was watching the twos.
Yeah, that was Mrs. Dittmer.
That was her, yeah. Hey, now, Aishy, big weekend coming up and for a great, great cause as well. What's actually happening down at Alberton?
Well, mate, obviously there's the old big bucket challenge for motor neurons disease and and that's in SA. So it's quite different to the one in Victoria.
Yep.
Where that's, you know, more for a cure. The motor neuron disease SA is more for, you know, looking after those that have it and, you know, funding occupational therapists and, you know, assisting with mobility and communication and, you know, wheelchairs and the like. So, you know, we're, you know, a few of us oldies are getting there and, you know, having a bit of ice and water tipped on our heads and, you know, hoping to raise funds for, you know, what is, you know, just another great, you know, charity, and there's so many of them, but, you know, motor neurons is something that's, you know, well and truly in the public eye, as we've seen in Victoria, but the one in SA is, you know, obviously not quite as prevalent, but, you know, we just have to do our little bit to help wherever we can.
Yeah, all right. Making a bit of headway with some cures and things, aren't they, Aishy? If you listen to Neil Danaher, it sounds like they're making a bit of ground.
Yeah, well, they certainly are, and Ruth, it's quite obvious, you know, they need the funds to be able to do that, to be able to research it, and as we know in anything, it's, you know, it's not cheap, and, you know, these great people that are, these great minds that, you know, that look for these cures and spend, you know, many hours, years, you know, decades, you know, trying to find it, and, you know, the people behind the scenes work tirelessly, as they do in a lot of areas to, you know, to make people aware of it. And, you know, I think it's, I think two people, you know, every day, you know, are diagnosed with this disease. So, you know, it is prevalent and, you know, what it does to the muscles and the disability that, you know, you're occurred by it. And, you know, as we've seen with, you know, Neil Danaher and the like, and, you know, we've just got to get behind it and, you know, try to raise funds for it and try to find a cure for it.
Yeah, good on you, Michael. And you know, Roo, that Don Pike, your coach, he lost his father to it. And
yeah, exactly.
It is just a shocking, shocking affliction. I don't know if it's a disease, but it's certainly an affliction. So, Ashley, on the weekend, there's yourself and Roger Woodcock, two Nord people we would love, love to tick a bucket of ice over. How many goals did Roger Woodcock kick against us over the years? Bloody hell.
I reckon he was up in the... I don't know if it was 400 to 600 or something, one of the best kicks for goals that I've seen. There's no question about that. So me and Woody, and I think it's good old George, you know, like antagonistic George Fiacci. He's going to be in amongst it, and that little nippy Adrian Setcher as well.
That's right. Yeah. So anyone going to the Port Nord game over the weekend, dig deep, put your hand in your pocket, because it is for this incredible cause, and well done, Michael, for getting involved. And I know that King O'Taylor will be there and Brad Ebert as well. They're going to tip the buckets of ice, Roo, over the heads.
Oh, beautiful.
So
King
Michael Ashe, Roger Woodcock, George Fiacci, Adrian Setri. And Roo, just before we let Michael go, I think there's another big lunch coming up.
Well, there is another one tomorrow, just quickly, the Friday long lunch at the Panorama Room at the Adelaide Convention Centre. This is for supporting prostate cancer. Now, they've got a big cast there as well. David Parkin's going to be there. Gil McLaughlin, the CEO of the AFL, will be getting interviewed by Hamish McLaughlin, who's one of the best MCs in Australia. They'll talk about John Riddell will be there as well. Now, this is all about prostate cancer. We speak about motor neurone disease, but prostate cancer is amazing. More men die from that than women die of breast cancer. It's amazing. And rural and regional areas have a 21% high chance of dying from that. And last year alone, 20,000 Australian men were diagnosed with prostate cancer, and 3,300 of those died. So that is a shocker as well. And we saw you in the paper on the weekend with Bob Hammond, Aishi as well. So it's a big one and a big lunch tomorrow. If you want to get tickets to that, give Karen Foster a call on 0417 733 447. That's 0417 733 447.
Aishi, thanks for joining us, mate. Have a great weekend, and let's hope you raise heaps of cash.
Yeah, and even more so legs. It's hopefully the legs smash the pies, eh?
Yeah, you just cut out there a bit. We just lost you.
See you,
Aishi. See you, mate.
Ruined Dits for breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
104.7 Adelaide's Triple M. Ruined Dits for breakfast. And Roo, we've got rock royalty in here this morning. This is one of the great all-time South Australian bands, and we love them, the Angels. John Brewster, good morning.
Yeah, good day. How are you, Dits?
Good. We love it when you pop in. We talk golf and we talk rock and roll and all sorts of things.
I'm never not playing golf today.
No, it's a bit ordinary.
She's a bit wet and woolly. You've brought out a new book coming out soon.
You're an author now, as well as a rock star.
Well, I'm not really. Rick and I collaborated. It's actually out now, and it's called The Angels, funnily enough.
Yeah, good name.
So autobiographical, is it about you as brothers or the band, or what is it?
It's really about the band. Probably deals mainly with Doc and Rick and me, and then, you know, in later years, with Dave Gleason coming into the band and my son playing bass because we lost Chris. You know, it's quite a journey. It's got very sad sides and also some ups and downs. And I mean, Doc made the best comment of all. He said, it's not all hugs and kisses in a band, you know.
No, it wouldn't be. And over 50 years, you would have had a few good times and a few blows and a few bits and pieces as well.
That all happened. I mean, you know, when we were younger, you know, just travelling the world and getting no sleep, and, you know, there'd be grumpy people in the mornings.
Oh, yeah.
It was the great rock and roll star. I know you'll know this straight away. He said, what was it? I wasted 90% of my money on booze and women and drugs and wasted the rest. Who was that? Is that typical? Is that the sort of thing we'll read in the book, or has it not been as hectic as that?
Look, you know, things happen on the road. Some things you just don't talk about.
Yep.
And we're going back a long time too, by the way. Yeah, I mean, obviously things happen on the road, and I mean, some of the demons are alcohol and drugs. There's no question of that. It's kind of interesting, the Angels now, because we've got Gleeso in the band, who's in his mid-40s, or towards the end of his 40s, I should say, and Rick and I are in our 60s, and my son Sam and Nick Norton, the drummer, they're in their 30s, and it's an amazing combination.
Where was the Brewster household? Where did you two boys grow up? And where did you meet Doc Neeson?
Well, we started life in Alexandra Avenue, Rose Park, because my grandfather had, it was my grandfather's
beautiful
house.
Beautiful street.
And, yeah, it's a beautiful street where that plantation is. But he was a concert pianist, and he just died like 4 months before I was born. He was only 62. So we lived with our grandmother for a while. Obviously, a pretty unpleasant time for the family. We moved around a bit, moved up to Burnside, and we met Doc when we had the Moonshine Jug and String Band. That had been going for about a year. Craig Holden, who's Mark Holden's brother.
Yeah.
He was our guitar player, and and he left because he wanted to make a fortune as an architect. He's, I think, succeeded in doing that. There might be that building there. And
that all right.
And we've reunited with him too. We've had a jug band reunion.
Right.
But Doc came into the band through our banjo player who knew him at Teachers College.
Right. God, he was a teacher. Imagine him teaching your kids.
Oh, yeah, that would, yes, we'd work any further with that. But Doc also did filmmaking and drama, as I did at Flinders Uni, but I didn't actually know him there.
Yeah.
So you're doing a tour as well?
Yes, we are. Fantastic tour we've got coming up with various special guests. We've got, when we do Adelaide, it's the 13th of October, we'll have My Sex with us. And let me tell you, they are fantastic.
Now, you're at the German Club. They're actually having a lot of gigs there these days, the German Club. It's a good venue.
It's fantastic.
Upstairs there.
Well, we're doing that with just Rick and me and our ex-lighting guy, Ray Hawkins, who is very entertaining. And that's related to the book. So we call that the book tour.
Ah.
And then we're doing the Thebe Theatre on the 13th of October.
That's right. You are too. We've been given tickets away for that. Yep. So, so there's a couple of things coming up. So a book coming out. Well, it's already out, the book, but also this twin disc that you've released as well, and a lot of songs on there that I don't recognise. So tell me about those.
Well, Rick and I kind of chose them because they're songs that that we really like a lot that aren't necessarily the hit songs. But one of the very interesting things is, or two things that I think is particularly interesting, is that we've got four Moonshine Jug and String Band songs, two of which Doc is singing. We've got some Brewster Brothers songs, which I sing, and some of those songs feature my three sons on stage with us. They're live tracks.
Yeah.
And, of course, Gleeso gets in there with the last
You leave him for one, do you?
He's there. He's there as well. Disc two is all Doc, and the last six songs are taken from the Symphony of Angels show that we did in 2010 at the Festival Theatre with the Symphony Orchestra.
Beautiful.
Gee, that turned out great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great. Yeah.
So September 2nd at the German Club, the Brewster Brothers.
Yes.
And then in October, Thebe Theatre with the Angels. And people, I'm sure, can look that up online if they want to head down there. And before you leave us, we've got the boys next door in the studio. Do you want to go and belt something out for us? Can you do that?
I think Lisa, I'm in fine form there, no doubt.
All right. Hey, John, thank you so much for coming. We love it when you call in.
Oh, so do I. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Get Ruin Dits for Breakfast, weekdays from 6, or subscribe to Ruin Dits for Breakfast Catch-Up at triplem.com.au.